I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And I'm Maya Grant.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love.
I'm not sure that you love what we're going to be ruining today.
I mean, some people love it. Some people are really fascinated and into it. What we're talking about is conspiracy theories.
Yes. It's a big week for conspiracy theories.
Big week for conspiracy theories. A lot of people are kind of into them as an object of fascination. I've always found them very strange, but we're going to dive in and look a little bit at the history of conspiracy theories and then what's going on today and what we think it all means.
How are you doing? And what are you drinking? And how did you get over your, how long did it take you to get over your like horrible hangover?
Okay, so I'm doing fine. It did take me a few days to get over that hangover.
Oh,
so when we last recorded, when we last recorded, it was slightly over a week ago. And the night before I had gone out for my birthday and drank myself sick. It was pretty bad. I did not drink anything for the next 5.5 days. I don't think I made it to the end of day six, but for me, that's a pretty long stretch without even like a glass of wine or anything. I just was so wrecked. I was so wrecked from the whole experience, but I'm back on that horse. I'm back on the drinking horse. I've got myself a spiced rum with a dash of orange bitters and I'm enjoying it. How about you? How are you doing? What are you drinking?
I had a lot of leftover lime juice that I squeezed and made other people squeeze from a party in which we ended up not using any of it.
Oh.
So I'm having a Commodore, which is rye, lime, and orange bitters as well.
How nice.
And it is very refreshing. And that is what I'm drinking today. And I'm doing all right. I mean, you know, there are all these fires in California and the world is ending. And that's not easy. But I'm just barreling through.
That's what we're all doing, right?
Mm.
So do we have any news updates that we need to share with our listeners?
I don't think it's going to be news by the time they hear this, but I have to ask, does anyone in Trump's land not record him when they're having conversations?
It's funny to me when I'm pretty sure in the past he's made all these accusations about Obama's recording him, the CIA is recording him. I think he even said when Comey was sharing with the world the details of some of their private conversations, Trump was saying,
Lordy,
oh, you
Lordy.
Just wait, I've got recordings and you'll see he's a liar. I think that on some level he was revealing that people in his circle are regularly recording conversations.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Even Omarosa, apparently, in her new book, I haven't been following this story, but on the treadmill, MSNBC was on, and I sort of caught it out the corner of my eye. Apparently, she's saying that Trump is on tape using the N-word.
Well, but that's what I was thinking about. It's like Omarosa, look, I have a really hard time with the whole, like, I realized after all these years
that
Trump is racist. You're like, okay.
No, Omarosa's a piece of shit. She's always been a piece of shit. That hasn't changed.
But she's recorded everything. And you're like, does everybody record everything because they know at some point they need to protect themselves from being scapegoated by this guy?
Like, if they're smart.
It's so fucked that they're like, okay, if I'm going to dance with the devil, I better at least have the shit on tape.
I better cover my ass. Yeah, I imagine so. Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting. So I'm very interested to see how things continue to unfold in this coming week of the Manafort trial and Omarosa's shit show.
Her book tour. I should let our listeners know that next week we're not going to have a new episode because I am going to be on vacation.
Woo! Where are you going?
Cabo. Doing...
Cabo.
No, well,
you know.
Come on, when you're from San Diego, going to Cabo is not exotic. It's like where our class went on spring break and senior trip.
I know.
Yeah, I'm going to do a thing that I never would have thought I would enjoy because my whole life I thought if I was ever going to travel, I'm going to go somewhere interesting and meet interesting people and explore the local culture and get new experiences. And now I'm like, I want an all-inclusive resort where they will bring me drinks by the pool. And that's it. That's I just listed everything I want.
And that is what you're going to get. And exactly. It's going to be fan-fucking-tastic.
Right. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to release a couple of bonus episodes, like maybe some short 5-10 minutes from previous episodes that didn't make it into the final cut. But of course, everything we say is brilliant and worth listening to. So I wouldn't want our listeners to miss out on that goodness.
All right, guys, on to conspiracy theories.
So the reason that we decided to talk about conspiracy theories is that they have really been popping up in the news quite a bit lately. For one thing, recently, Alex Jones of InfoWars was kicked off of Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, even some other platforms that I think I'm not thinking of. Everything except Twitter as of this recording. We'll see how that plays out. And of course, Alex Jones is known for being an extreme right-wing conspiracy monger, most particularly for promoting the conspiracy theory that the Sandy Hook Elementary school shooting was a hoax, which is really horrifying considering that people who buy into it act upon that and really harass those poor families.
Who lost their first grade children.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. We're not going to get too much into our feelings about him getting kicked off social media, though that is something maybe worth circling back to in the future. But also in the news recently has been the topic of QAnon, because folks at Trump rallies, he's been having these fucking campaign rallies. At the rallies, we've increasingly been seeing people wearing T-shirts, carrying signs that refer to this thing called QAnon, which, if you're not familiar, the gist of it is it started on 4chan as a joke. And it's really convoluted.
Purposefully so.
Purposefully so, yes.
Because the vaguer it is, the more, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, we'll get more into the details of it. But the point being that it's an out of control, bizarre conspiracy theory that has started to apparently gain some kind of foothold in Trump fan circles, leading to like the Washington Post did a whole piece about what is QAnon. Other outlets have done that. It's become a mainstream talking point. It's part of the discourse. So we should talk about this phenomenon because it's pretty fascinating.
I also have an essay that's going to be coming out in the LA Review of Books in the next couple of weeks about a movie called Amerageddon, which is a movie that came out in the summer of 2016. And it applies here. Amerageddon is essentially the film adaptation of one of the most long-standing right-wing conspiracy theories in our current American culture. It was written, produced by, and stars a guy named Gary Heaven, who is a multimillionaire who made his fortune as the founder and CEO of the Curves Women Fitness Gyms.
Curves, yes.
Yes.
Hey, where there's a market.
Hey, man.
There's a kooky millionaire waiting to happen.
And what I find really interesting about this movie, by the way, if you go to the Amerageddon website, which I encourage you all to do, if you go to the Amerageddon website, it's endorsed by two people, Jason Van Hove of the Oath Keepers, which is a militia right-wing organization, and Alex Jones of InfoWars. And Alex Jones actually has a cameo in the opening scene of Amerageddon. Basically, the conspiracy theory is, and we'll take you a little bit into the history of it, but America's infrastructure is going to get hit by an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, destroying all electricity. And the U.S. is going to declare martial law. People are going to get their guns confiscated. And we're all going to be made to suffer and move to FEMA camps or whatever until we accept the coming of the New World Order. The New World Order is a cabal that is run under the auspices of the UN.
Right.
And the reason that I got interested in Amerageddon, I was doing this project about guns and about the gun debate. Mm-hmm. And I had come across this conspiracy theory because it's one thing the NRA does. The NRA says people are going to try to take your guns away by declaring martial law. And so I thought, oh, I should make a video of that. And then I saw that this movie was opening that week. And I was like, I guess I don't have to. I guess it's already made by actual people who believe
it. Who believe that. Wow. I think yours might have been better, Maya.
It's possible. But what's interesting and what I want to throw in is that early in the movie, this plutocrat calls the president, calls the American president, and says, Mr. President, we made a deal. We installed you in power in exchange for us taking over. And the taking over means this EMP that's going to hit America, and then they're going to infiltrate our government with Russians. And that's the moment where you're like, oh shit, this insane right-wing conspiracy theory movie
just predicted what has actually happened.
That's right. Except Gary Heaven, Mr. Curves, is a massive Trump supporter.
Of course.
So we have Alex Jones, we have QAnon, we have Amerigeddon, and now we're going to try to break this shit down.
Let's do it.
What I wanted to do for you guys was introduce you to this amazing essay that you can find if you Google it. You can find the PDF of it. It's an essay from Harper's Magazine from 1964 called The Paranoid Style in American Politics. It's by Richard Hofstadter. And if you go and read it, you'll be like, holy shit, this is amazing. This is exactly what's happening right now. And he talks about the right-wing paranoia behind all of their conspiracy theories. This is in 1964, so he talks about McCarthy. Mm-hmm. But then what he does is he takes it back to paranoid American conspiracy theories all the way from the beginning of the United States as a nation. And he takes us back to the fear of the Illuminati, of the Bavarian Illuminati in the late 18th century. Wow. And America's fear of that the Illuminati were taking over. The fear of Catholics that you saw in the years right after the Civil War. You have the fear of the Masons, the fear of the Catholics, and all of it sounds exactly like what the current day conspiracy theorists are doing. It's really quite lovely. Oh, I love this line. This is just so good. I have to read this.
Okay.
Anti-Catholicism has always been the pornography of the Puritan.
Whereas, oh, wow.
It's so good. Whereas the anti-Masons had envisaged drinking bouts and had entertained themselves with sadomasochistic fantasies about the actual enforcement of grisly Masonic oaths, the anti-Catholics invented an immense lore about libertine priests, the confessional as an opportunity for seduction, licentious convents and monasteries. So,
right. And they were only a little bit right.
Just only a little bit. And so you're reading about the history and you're like, oh, this is fun. Anti-Masons, anti-Catholics. And then you come to a section halfway through called Why They Feel Dispossessed. And that's where you're like, oh, shit. Here we are with the right wing that voted for Trump. It says the modern right wing feels dispossessed. America has largely been taken away from them and their kind, though they are determined to try to repossess it and to prevent the final destructive act of subversion.
Wow.
Yeah. And it talks about how in the moment that he's writing, the real fear was about communism.
Sure.
But like the specifics are different, but the energy is exactly the same. The construction of the form is exactly the same.
I'm really fascinated by this idea that there's something about right-wing thought that lends itself to conspiracy theories or like is somehow intrinsically connected to conspiracy theories. And I hear that in that essay and that feeling assaulted, feeling like we had possession of this country, everything was good. They hearken back to a past that never existed where everything was better and was exactly how they fantasize it should be. And now everything's being ruined and they feel under attack. They feel like they are losing control. And the conspiracy theory sort of gives some sense of control or some sense of belief that there's order to things. It's not just random. There's order to things.
There's order to things. And also there's a way in which they paint the enemy as being really like decadent.
Yeah.
And like really like sex having evil orgies. Like, I think that that is a huge part of it. I feel like the right wing conspiracy theorist needs to feel the dirtiness of the left wing, of this penetrating organ that's going to come in and mess everything up. And you see it with a lot of the race stuff.
Yeah.
I was reading this amazing essay about porn during the Civil War and the introduction of porn during the Civil War, and how like the idea of amalgamation, which was race mixing, like that's what those people who are trying to be abolitionists are doing. It's so dope. Yeah.
That's really fascinating. So I think it's very interesting to me that at some point between like McCarthyism and the 70s, the conspiracy theory thing kind of shifted to becoming a left-wing thing in the JFK conspiracy theories, the JFK assassination conspiracy theories, which for our generation, we grew up with that shit. Like, if you said conspiracy theory, you meant JFK assassination. That was what everyone thought of. And that was about believing that there were these forces behind the scenes who weren't liberal, licentious, immoral forces, but rather more fascistic control forces that were limiting our freedoms in this secret way.
Definitely there was a left-wing conspiratorial mind that emerged from the 60s, mm-hmm. but at the same time, the right-wing conspiratorial mind was going strong.
Yeah.
It's not like it was the leftist turn. I think the right wing was deeply still very involved in this. And I think there are plenty of right wingers who have a lot to say about JFK.
Yeah. And one's take on the JFK assassination and whichever conspiracy theory one subscribes to will depend on your political affiliation.
Well, but what I want to add to that is that, and I know I've brought it up before, that wonderful podcast Slow Burn about Watergate that is on Slate has an entire episode just about the rise of conspiracy theories during Nixon.
Oh,
and how one of the things that's crazy about that is that there were all these loons and left-wing conspiracy theorists, and it all came out of JFK and then RFK and all of these assassinations. But then so much of the crazy Nixon shit turned out to be true. And
right.
I think that was one of the, like, I think he tracks it as like a turning point in America in terms of conspiracy theory, because all the worst, craziest shit that you could imagine, it all happened.
It all actually turned out to be true.
It was all true.
There were evil forces working behind the scenes.
Yep.
And intrepid investigators were able to uncover that. So that just gave fuel to everyone's perception that conspiracy theories might be true.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of led into the 80s fascination with, you know, Oliver Stone made the movie JFK. And, you know, you get to the point in the 90s where, like, the X-Files depicts the smoking man, who's the shadowy figure who's secretly behind everything in history.
Totally.
And as viewers, we've now at this point as a culture been totally primed to understand what this narrative is. And when they hint that he's the guy behind the grassy knoll, like, everybody gets that.
Yes.
Everybody knows about the grassy knoll. Everybody knows about the second shooter. And it's just a mainstream thing to think that maybe there was more to that story than the official story would allow.
So events of the 60s lead to this seeping in of the fringe right wing paranoid style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have McCarthyism in the 50s, the fear of communism, the Cold War anxiety. You have all of the chaos of the 60s leading to the people who grew up in the 60s and came up in that time making movies and TV shows in the 80s and 90s that are sort of putting it in our cultural imaginary.
Yeah.
One thing I will add is that the conspiracy theory that Amerageddon translates to film was based in the Birchers, the John Birch Society, the sort of racist right-wing society. And actually, again, back to the paranoid style. Jesus, this guy was on the mark. He has a little pullout section called The Paranoid Style in Action. And the John Birch Society attempting to suppress a TV show about the UN because they believe that the UN is an instrument of the Soviet communist conspiracy. So everything about the UN being behind everything, like that conspiracy theory that Gary Heaven, our Curves CEO, was really needed to make a movie out of, that comes from the John Birch Society in the 60s.
Now I'd love to talk about more recent adventures in conspiracy theories. I do think that the current generation of conspiracy theories, if you will, depart from older models, though there's clearly a through line and an influence. But I do think some new things are happening now.
Probably because of the internet.
Yeah. I think that I would say that this new generation of conspiracy theories starts with 9/11 truthers.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first conspiracy theory that I came across on the internet. Like sometime in the early 2000s, I was on a message board talking about politics or whatever, and somebody linked to a video about 9/11 trutherism. And I clicked on it and watched the thing. And I don't remember the specific details, but it was very much oriented around, like, let's examine this photograph. If a plane had really crashed here, you would see such and such, but you don't see that here.
Right.
This, like, amateuristic analysis. And, you know, I have a very tendency towards skepticism, though it's not the most attractive quality to have in a friend or colleague, because everything you tell me, I'm like, that's not true. There's no fucking way that's true.
You know who's like that? My fucking brother is like that. He's like one of those natural skeptics.
Yeah, that's me.
And he's a political scientist who does a lot of quantitative stuff. So whenever you're like, there's this new study, he's like, is there though? Because like, what were their techniques in terms of like, how did they
actually...
I'll need
their methodology, what their sample size was. Exactly.
And I'm like, let me believe it.
Sometimes you just want to believe it. I'm kind of like that. I'm not a statistician, but I do have that tendency that if anyone tells me something, I'm like, really? Like, prove that to me. Right. And like, I will tell you why your idea won't work.
Yeah,
I'll give you all the reasons it won't work. But for that reason, I could watch a video like that and be like, wow, this is some shit. Like, this doesn't make any sense. If you take a moment to stop and think about it, this doesn't make sense. But I could see how somebody who's more credulous could very easily be like, wow, how do you explain what we see in that photograph? Or how do you explain, you know, that jet fuel can't get to a high enough temperature to melt steel beams or whatever thing they're asserting.
Right.
So I do think that that ushered in a new era in this idea of the conspiracy theory, where it goes from like your JFK type conspiracy theory or your Bircher style UN thing to something, I don't know, something more crowdsourced, if you will.
Well, I also think crowdsourced for sure. But I also think that in addition to the internet, I think it's also the explosion of digital media, because now anyone can manipulate digital media. Like anyone can start playing. It's not just that we can share it or have these conversations. It's this increased ability for all for people in a very democratized way to manipulate material.
That's
and
a
then
really good
also
point.
Share it. And I think that what we're seeing with all of these things is that in times of great chaos and uncertainty, we want an answer. Like we want to really know. And I feel that. It's not like I don't feel that.
I think we all feel that for sure. And I mean, that kind of gets back to the JFK thing for me. I think part of the romance behind JFK conspiracy theory is it is connected to Watergate for sure. But I think there's also like among baby boomers, a real deep seated challenge regarding their feelings of guilt and regret about Vietnam and wanting to absolve themselves of that. And If you have this story of, well, there's this military-industrial complex and the CIA
right.
in partnership with whatever private business, they needed to get rid of JFK so they could clear the way to have this war they wanted. It just it puts all the responsibility on these evil forces, not on the American yes. public for allowing it to happen.
Yes.
And it also feeds into the baby boomers, like, self-indulgent, like, oh, JFK's death was, or his assassination was the loss of America's innocence, which is not true. It's true that they were turning 14. And
it was the loss. It was at the time when they were losing their innocence. Yeah, that's right.
They were just learning that their parents are human beings.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the same time, the president was murdered. And they're like, oh, wow, it's so weird how everything went to shit after that. And you're like, no, it didn't. It was always shit. But it felt to them like that.
But isn't it also really interesting? Because I think one thing that contributed to this increasing feeling about JFK's assassination being part of a conspiracy is also the death of RFK. And isn't it interesting that we're in this moment, and in a true crime moment, where there's like a podcast about it, there's a show on Netflix about it, about how Sirhan Sirhan did not work alone in the killing of RFK, and that there are unexplained gun holes, and that there are things that, like, Robert Kennedy's son is like in there with Sirhan Sirhan and leaves being like, yeah, he was hypnotized. Something's up here. Like, we're still in a moment where some of this stuff is coming up.
It's still resonating. Yeah. But I think that speaks more to people's true crime interest than anything, that people are really fascinated by the idea of a situation where you have this set of facts that are unexplained and you can devise your own theories that explain those set of facts, and you can argue with other people about their theories that explain that set of facts. And I totally get why that's appealing.
Right.
I think it may be less to do with conspiracy theories, which are claiming to, like, have an answer for you that's just, like, complicated involved thing.
But back to this idea of, like, needing to have some kind of cohesion in a time of chaos, the birther conspiracy, which you brought up before we talked, I think for white people, for whom Obama's election to them was chaos, anxiety and chaos, the birth certificate thing, or the idea that he wasn't born here, he could not be a legitimate president, there's got to be a reason,
right?
Was their version of attempting to have control.
Absolutely. And that leads into more latter day conspiracy theories, like the ones that Alex Jones promotes, birtherism, the Sandy Hook trutherism. I don't even know where to start with that. I don't know what that is. I guess the premise behind it is that these mass shootings are faked in order to justify some kind of gun control laws, which we never have anyway.
Yes. Now, listeners, including new listeners, hi guys. I want you to know how much I love you guys. I watched a bunch of Alex Jones today
that
I could be ready for this.
Oh my God. I thought watching Amerigeddon that I did a lot, but you fucking watched Alex Jones.
Look, back to Amerigeddon. I mean, that's part of the big thing about that movie is that it's a Second Amendment movie. It's like, and it actually, a group of patriots with the remains of the Second Amendment fight against the New World Order. But this idea of the New World Order is something that was huge for Alex Jones. Like, that there is going to be a new world order.
Interesting.
That's one of his big things.
I have to say, as a side note, that when I was watching Amerigeddon today, those scenes with the plutocrat in Dubai sort of doing his, like, evil thing. It really reminded me of Captain America Winter Soldier. It's like almost the same plot. Like, I don't want to spoil that movie for you, but it
I know
was,
you very much want me to watch that
it
movie.
It was disturbingly similar. Let's move on to current day. Like, what is happening right now? I feel like something interesting has happened where you have conspiracy theories like Pizzagate and now this QAnon thing,
which come out of Alex Jones. This is like InfoWars. This is InfoWars bread and butter.
Yes, but these two particularly, I think, come more out of 4chan. So there's a weird kind of wrench being thrown into the works where 4chan is a place of chaos. And it's a place where there's as much true belief as there is trolling and attention seeking. Yes. So you have more ambiguity around what the conspiracy theory means to the people who buy it in terms of like, is it, do they literally think it's true or do they just like the idea of it? Are they associating themselves with it because it's like a community of people who are in on the joke?
Right.
Some combination thereof. It kind of exists in both spaces at the same time in a weird way.
Is it a creative way of trying to understand things as a way of containing the chaos so they can like bear another day of living in uncertainty and anxiety?
Yeah.
But what's interesting about Pizzagate and then QAnon is that it comes back to this fear of the decadent that the paranoid style talks about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because basically what it is saying that there's a massive global child sex ring that is being run in many ways by the Democratic Party and Democratic Party funders.
Mostly Hillary Clinton. I feel like mostly Hillary Clinton.
Oh, God. That's exactly what I think about when I see her. I'm like, you run a massive child sex ring in your spare time. That is what you do.
I mean, is this... is this a, in some way, natural endpoint to the way that Hillary has been talked about in right-wing circles over the last 30 years? Is that just inevitably the direction that that's going to go if you keep building her up as this figure of deception? She lies, she cheats, she's doing nasty things behind the scenes. Nothing she says can be believed. She's secretly conspiring in various ways to enrich herself. And maybe the logical endpoint of that is like, yeah, she runs a global child sex ring.
Well, it's almost like the shadow has to be bigger and bigger and bigger to take her down.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is the most extreme version of what it needs to be right now, an organized child sex ring. And even though Alex Jones didn't like invent Pizzagate, he super promoted it. And it's one of the few things he ended up having to actually apologize for because some guy went to this like pizza store and like shot it up and then was like, oh, whoops.
And it's an actual pizza place in DC that for some reason they targeted as being the center of this conspiracy. And yeah, a dude went in there with a gun, man. I mean, it's lucky that no one was hurt there.
But what's very weird is that the QAnon thing, which again started as this real combination of like joking and trolling and whatever, the QAnon thing is that, yes, there is this massive child sex trafficking, even though Pizzagate has been shown to be not true.
Yeah, that doesn't matter to conspiracy theorists.
This is what I find the most interesting about QAnon, which makes me think it's left-wing trollers, which makes me think it's like some left-wing person completely just having one over on the Trump people, is that it's trying to say that actually the Mueller investigation is being done in collaboration with Trump to try to track this sex trafficking ring. So actually the Mueller investigation is a good thing.
Yes, it is secretly investigating Hillary and Obama.
Yes.
The idea that they're investigating Trump is a front to hide their real agenda.
Yes.
Which does lend credence to the idea that it's a left-wing troll, right?
Totally. Totally. Where they're like, no, you want the Mueller investigation. Like, don't mess with that Mueller investigation. Trump's really, he's down with it. He just has to pretend that he's not.
I mean, the essence of the QAnon conspiracy is that Trump is behind everything. That whatever happens, whether it appears good for Trump or bad for Trump, it's all part of this plan that this mastermind, Trump, has put into action. And he is controlling and pulling the levers. And maybe we can suss out what his plan is. Maybe not. But you got to have faith in the plan.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Which is like so fucking fantastic. It's like, oh, it's got to be a troll. But it's a big enough thing that at all of these insane Nazi rallies, they're like holding up Q signs and people are wearing QAnon t-shirts.
Yeah, they're into it. Whatever, they got a fandom going on.
Oh my God. So a conspiracy theory is a way of explaining the chaos mm-hmm. by blaming it on one specific force. It can't just be that a series of these different circumstances are combining to create this moment.
Right. There's never a coincidence.
No, it's not a coincidence, or it's not even like the amplification of different social forces might lead to certain things.
Right. It has to be intentional.
And the person who intends it has to just be really bad. They have to stand against everything you believe in.
Yes.
So there's never this sort of skepticism about like, well, I don't know why anybody would want to do that, because that doesn't sound like something that most people would want. It's like, no, they want to run a giant child sex trafficking ring. Here is my thing. Okay. Here's what I need to bring up. I have found myself, particularly in the 6 months after the 2016 election, going what I like to call full Louise Mensch. Like full Louise Mensch.
Explain, because maybe our listeners aren't familiar with Louise Mensch and what she's been up to. Just give a brief. So
Louise Mensch has a Twitter feed and a blog called Patriobotic, which I don't know what is like. Is it supposed to be like Patriot Biotic, like antibiotics, like probiotics, or is it like
robotic?
It's not clear to me. Louise Mensch is a British, formerly a conservative member of parliament. Mm-hmm. And novelist who came to the States and started working in, quote, like journalism, like libertarian journalism. And she does this thing where she's like the left-wing conspiracy theory version, where she's always mm-hmm. writing about what Putin's doing. Every time there's an arrest or an indictment, she's like, I saw this a year ago. We broke it first. She wants us to believe that she has very, very inside sources that are letting us know these things. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff is cray cray. Some of the stuff is managing to land because real life is so cray cray.
Right.
Like, it's a really interesting moment. And I find myself less now, but I found myself wanting to believe it, because it could not be that Trump won the election by any kind of legitimate means. It could not be.
I mean, I for sure retweeted Louise Mensch probably about a year ago. I came across some tweet where she was like predicting something. She was like, my insider sources say that, like, some promise that there would be a revelation that would prove everything we know is true.
Yes.
And I retweeted it and someone was like, yeah, Louise Mensch, she's not, I don't believe her shit. And I was like, oh, I didn't even really know who she was. I just was like, this sounds good, retweet. And
I want to believe this.
This confirms my biases perfectly. So I found out who she was. I was like, oh, okay, I get how this works. But like, I can see the appeal. It's hard to be patient around the Mueller investigation and waiting for everything to play out, especially because we know Trump and his team have never been very good at hiding what the fuck they're up to. The dude on TV told the Russians to hack Hillary's emails. That's the thing. That's what I can't get over. I keep thinking, like, I picture this like sci-fi classroom like 100 years from now, and there's like teenagers in AP US history. You know, this is a fantasy in itself, that like the world will still exist and there'll still be history classes and so forth. But they're learning about this and they're watching the video of Trump and they're like, wait, I don't understand. He said what he was doing.
Yeah. Right.
He never made a secret about it.
It's so hard.
I know.
Because you're like, how can you think that this is a conspiracy theory when the people we think are involved in the conspiracy are saying we conspired?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When there are literally emails from Donald Trump Jr. to this like Kremlin associate
being like, it's almost brilliant.
You have dirt on Clinton. I love it. Like, that's a conspiracy theory. It's like, no.
It's almost brilliant that they're like, if it's a conspiracy theory, it has to be shadowy and hidden. So let's just tweet it. If you just fucking tweet it, then people are like, well, it's just a tweet. Oh, it's not a conspiracy, because like who would fucking do that?
It's like on SNL where Michael Che was playing Lester Holt interviewing Trump. And Trump is like, yeah, so I asked him to not get involved with Flynn. And then when he indicted him, I fired him. And Holt is like, Michael Che's Holt is like, oh, he actually said it. He just admitted to it. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters.
It doesn't matter. Nothing matters.
Anymore. But there is a way in which there was a lot of warnings around Louise Mensch from the left wing to the left wing saying, hey, guys, let us not be like these right wing conspiracy theorists.
Right.
Let us be a little more measured and smarter than that. I think my favorite conspiracy theory of hers at the peak of her stuff is this intimation, because conspiracy theorists work a lot in intimation. And this is one thing that I write about in the essay about Amerigeddon, is that the reason Amerigeddon fails as a movie, and it's like a really bad movie, is because a conspiracy theory is best lived in the imagination, in the gaps between the actual evidence, where you are imaginatively making the connections. That's where a conspiracy theory is really the richest and most effective. And I feel like with Amerigeddon, it tries to explain it and make everything really explicit. And that's where it falls apart, because you're like,
it's too literal. It's very literal. It's like, this is what's happening. This is what could happen. And it plays it out in a pseudo-realistic setting. And I feel like when it comes to conspiracy theories, the details don't even really matter that much. You could believe that the UN is being controlled by the Russians and the Chinese and they're going to take over. And then Trump is like, hey, I'm meeting with Putin. The Russians are great. And it's like, that's fine. You can still support Trump, because it was never about the Russians per se.
Right.
It didn't have to do with the specifics of that conspiracy theory. It was more the gist of the idea that there are these forces that liberals are promoting, and they're just bad. They're just bad,
Whatever they are. But also, like, you know, Clinton's friends with this guy. This guy's known to be a this. So what do you think that it's like this transitive property? If this is connected to this and this connected to that, what do you think about that? And I feel like what's amazing about Louise Mensch is that she's really a master at suggesting things. She's a master at suggesting things. And one of my favorite things that she suggested, and I went back and tried to look it back up, and I realized how much of it she had triggered in me to build, was this idea that Obama and W knew what was coming with Trump in collusion. So in the handover of power, they went and did these operations. And one day we will know what heroes they were to protect American society from what Trump was bringing in with Putin. And she'll show a picture of, like, Michelle Obama hugging W, and like this thing where it's like they were told what was coming. So they did something to save us, because they are true American patriots.
And it speaks so deeply to your desire to believe that.
To believe that
there's somebody in a position of real power who knows what's going on and is in control and is taking action, and like everything's going to be okay.
Part of me, even talking about Louise Mensch, I'm like, what harm is it in that? But there is a harm. There is an actual concrete harm to the proliferation of conspiracy theories.
For right-wing conspiracy theories, we've seen the harm in things like, we mentioned, a dude showing up with a gun at some pizza joint. We've also seen Sandy Hook families being harassed to the point where they've had to move. They've had to leave their homes.
Yep. We've seen a wild increase in gun ownership.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And gun hoarding. Mm-hmm. And then we can say that that's probably correlated to higher incidence of gun violence.
Yeah, I mean, if there's more guns out there, there's more gun violence. I don't think it's hard to see that correlation. Even the Louise Mensch stuff, as you said, I think there's a harm in that right now there actually is a conspiracy going on. There is a conspiracy from the Russian side. There are plutocrats and oligarchs who are conspiring to influence U.S. politics, and it's serious and it's real. And when you talk about it, you sound like a wacko conspiracy theorist. And her throwing false information and innuendo and insinuations into the mix only helps feed the idea that we are the conspiracy theorists who see connections that don't exist. We see literally conspiracy which doesn't exist, collusion, if right. you will. And I just think there's a real danger in that.
Also, the guy who's accused of setting the 18-acre holy fire that is currently burning in Orange County, his Facebook page, this is a quote from the LA Times, is littered with links to popular conspiracy theories involving 9/11, terror attacks, the mass shooting in Vegas last year, and QAnon.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
That's yeah. fucked up.
Yeah, this arsonist is an alt-right conspiracy theorist. So because I think that when there is this idea that there's one person in charge and we have to go after that, like there's somebody who's going to go after that one person, wherever, whoever it is. And I think that you see a lot of anxiety in people where they're like, this is going to cause physical harm to people.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to die over this.
Yeah. And I think this is a good place to mention something that has been on my mind, which is that these out and out conspiracy theories are of a piece with some of the other stuff we see on the right that is conspiracy theory-esque, but maybe mm-hmm. not as like directly obviously that thing. And what I'm talking about is the alt-right, white nationalism, that whole world. They're very rooted in similar ways of thinking. Like, I mean, what is white nationalism? In a lot of ways, it is just a conspiracy theory. Their conspiracy theory is that Jews basically are trying to destroy the white ethnostate of America by promoting multiculturalism. That's an essential white nationalist belief. And I mean, that's a conspiracy theory. That's what it is. That's what they are at their core.
One thing that I feel like we haven't mentioned, but I want to briefly mention, just to bring it back to our conversation about Fox News and it as a radicalizing force, is that Fox is the mainstream version of this.
Yes.
In that it's saying the liberal media isn't telling you the truth, so we will. Mm-hmm. The liberal media is very invested in framing things in this one way. So we're going to frame things in a different way, which I understand being very appealing. And this is why you need a diversity of news sources, because it's absolutely true. Like, things exist in an echo chamber, but there is a way in which Fox News has been the mainstream version of conspiracy theory thinking.
Yeah.
That is not the truth. We know the truth. And I have been a longtime independent student of cults, of cults and mystics and gurus and all of these different movements.
Yes.
And one of the things that you see in cults, and there's a wonderful biography of Charles Manson that came out a couple of years ago that I highly recommend, that reminds me of Alex Jones very strongly.
Interesting.
Is that one of the things that cults do, or cult leaders do, is that to maintain their followers, they have to constantly be raising the stakes. They have to constantly be saying, no, this is more important. No, the world's going to end next Tuesday, and then the world doesn't end. So they're like, well, that's because it's really going to end, really, 3 weeks from today. There's a way that Manson did it, that the People's Temple Jim Jones did it, mm-hmm. which led to the largest mass suicide in our history, where in order to keep people engaged, you have to always be raising the stakes, who's at fault, how dangerous it is, how it's going to really fuck you up.
Right.
And the problem with that is that at some point it ends because some massive act of violence happens. Yeah. Helter skelter happens. Mass suicide happens. Like, at some point, people feel so invested in what you're telling them that they do things that are extraordinarily dangerous and unnecessary.
Yeah.
And that's what Alex Jones feels like to me. And you see it in his performance, where he's trying to accelerate the emotion in how he's talking, where he'll cry or he'll like scream. And it's because he's trying to keep you believing it by raising the stakes. Scientology does the same thing.
Glenn Beck used to do that.
That's right.
Yeah. But he sort of left that world and is now somewhat repentant about it. But that's exactly what he did. It was this like over emotional really like agitated thing where he was so emotional. There was always this emotional element to it. And that's interesting because, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Conspiracy theories are never really about, you know, putting together the pieces and solving the mystery. Conspiracy theories are about emotion.
Yeah. And they are about what your feelings are. It does make me think about projection. And that's one of the things about Trump. It's like he's always projecting. He's like, this election is rigged and he's rigging an election, whatever.
Whenever he accuses someone of something, it's clear that he's talking about something he's done. I think,
yeah,
for two reasons, if I may digress a bit into my little bit of Trump psychoanalysis.
Please.
Number one, I think because he feels compelled to confess. Like he has to get it out there. And number two, because he has no imagination. So he's completely incapable of coming up with an accusation. So he has to draw upon stuff he knows.
I do want to read one last thing from The Paranoid Style, if we could, on our way out.
Please do.
He says, and this is something maybe to think about as we keep moving on, it's hard to resist the conclusion that this enemy is on many counts a projection of the self, both the ideal and the unacceptable aspects of the self are attributed to him. And he says that the enemy may be the cosmopolitan intellectual, but the paranoid will then outdo him in the apparatus of scholarship. The KKK imitated Catholicism to the point of donning priestly vestments, developing an elaborate research and an equally elaborate hierarchy. The John Birch Society emulates communist cells and quasi-secret operation through front groups. So what Hofstadter is arguing, which I think really brings us to these people, is that everything that they are accusing this enemy of doing, they are trying to outdo the enemy in.
That's fucking fascinating. And it reminds me of Armageddon in a lot of ways, the idea of accusing the enemy of doing the things that you do, you know, it's like, oh, the Russians are taking over. The Russians and the Chinese are going to take over America. Vote Trump. like that doesn't make logical sense.
Right.
But the thing that they fear is the thing that they become in a really interesting way.
And that it is engaging in the paranoid thinking that makes them become the thing that they fear. That it is engaging in the paranoid style that makes you the monster that you are accusing these other people of being.
Okay, it's time for the drunkometer, which we are doing because we are drinking.
Mm.
Here's where we rate how drunk we are on a scale of 1 to 10 with one sentence of explanation. Maya, you go.
I'm kind of actually like a 3-4.
Oh.
I think I was so worried about drinking fast that I then drank too slowly.
That's probably smart when it comes down to it. It's way better than drinking too fast, as I can attest to. So I'm putting myself, I'm going to put myself at between a 6, can we say 6.5?
Yeah.
I don't know if we do half point.
Yeah, of course.
I've only had a couple of cocktails, but after just having like almost a week off, I'm like a cheap date right now. I feel lightheaded. My dad thinks, side note, my father, who's a retired physician, when I told him about getting sick on my birthday, he was saying that, well, that was probably due to vasodilation, hypotension. That's what he said.
Oh, very good.
Hypotension due to vasodilation that may have been caused by dehydration. So maybe I'm a little bit, I do have a low blood pressure generally. I did work out today, so okay, maybe I'm a little drunker than I should be off 2 cocktails. Maybe I had 3 cocktails. I've lost count. We'll call it a 7.
That's fantastic. I think
it was way more
really
than a
good
sentence of explanation.
I think that's great. I would like to give a quick shout out, actually, though, to my friend Elizabeth Nelson, who has a band with her husband, Timothy Bracey, called The Paranoid Style, which is actually named after the essay, The Paranoid Style.
Amazing.
They are a really great band, and you should all go listen to them.
That is great.
But I'm going to miss you next week.
Yes.
And we'll find things to talk about. That gives you guys an extra week to catch up on our back catalog, which is now all on iTunes. It gives our longtime listeners a chance to write us a review on iTunes, promote us, think about us, love us, miss us.
Yes. Tell us what topics you would like to hear us talk about, because we love getting ideas for topics from our listeners.
And if you don't, we're going to talk about Spike Lee next time, because I'm going to go see Black Panther.
I'm pretty jazzed to talk about Spike Lee, but you have to wait till I've seen it too.
Okay.
Also, if you haven't done an iTunes review, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, guys.
It doesn't take a long time.
No.
You just go write a goddamn 3-sentence thing. It helps us.
Yeah, it really does.
It's a great way to help us out. Please do it.
If you want to write to us, we are at saucepodcast@gmail.com. We are at saucepodcast on all of the medias of social. If you want to just find me because you want to read my essay in the LA Review of Books, I'm at Maya Garance. Anywhere you are looking for Maya Garance.
And I am at Gynostar on Twitter and Instagram and that stuff. You can also read my webcomic, gynostar.com.
You really should. It will enrich your life.
I like to think it will.
I know it will.
All right, until we return, take care. Adios, amoebas.